morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday morning, the 2nd of May. Before we proceed with our important hours this morning, we do want to thank you for our important day yesterday. All of you who contributed during our winter membership drive, this is the way to go. It was one day we had more than 1,900 listeners pledge. We welcome 217 brand new members to WPR, and you donated $220,000 to Wisconsin Public Radio and the programs that are vital to you, and thank you very much. This hour of the program, a very difficult story. Last week, an 8-story block housing factories and a shopping center on the outskirts of the Bangladeshi capital collapsed. And the reports this morning are that rescuers have found more bodies in the concrete debris of this collapsed garment factory. Authorities say it may take another 5 days to clear the rubble. There are 433 people confirmed dead. Police report that 149 people are still missing in what has become the worst disaster for Bangladesh's $20 billion a year garment industry. Charles Kernaghan is our guest this hour. It's been a while since we've spoken with Charlie. He is director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights, human rights organization dedicated to the promotion and defense of internationally recognized worker rights in the global economy. It was founded in 1981. It's headquartered in Pittsburgh, and they have regional offices in third world countries. Charlie became involved in the protection of worker rights while on an international religious peace march through Central America in the mid-80s when many union leaders were being assassinated. He is known as the man who made Kathy Lee cry after exposing that 13-year-old children were working in a brutal Honduran sweatshop earning pennies an hour sewing Kathy Lee Gifford's clothing line for Walmart. Charlie has testified frequently in the U.S. Congress. He does a lot of work in Bangladesh. He visits there many times each year. And the Institute, as you might imagine, has a team on the ground there right now. We'll be welcoming phone calls for him during the course of this hour. Our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@WPR.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Hello, Charlie. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Well, thank you.
This story really is so hard to take in, isn't it? And the fact is that there are a lot of stories like this, and there were TV reports, I understand, the night before this garment factory collapsed showing the cracks in the walls and deeming this to be an unsafe building. A lot of people must have known this was an unsafe building.
Well, it was. I mean, it was on the April 23rd, on a Tuesday, when the workers actually heard the cracks. When they were in work, they were at work that morning, they heard this horrible noise. There was crumbling inside the factory, and all the workers ran out. And when they looked up, they could see there were very big cracks in this factory, this 8-story factory. What happened was the following day, they wouldn't go in, and of course everybody said the building should be condemned. When the workers went back on Wednesday the 24th, they were met by the owner, the corrupt owner who owns that 8-story building that was shoddily built. The owner was there, along with a bunch of gang members and thugs who were carrying clubs. Mm. And when the young girls came to see what was going to happen that day on Wednesday, the owner said to them, you have to go into the building because you're not going to get paid for the month of April. They get paid every month unless you get in there and finish the clothing so we can ship it out. Then you'll get paid. If you don't go in, you're not going to get paid. And besides that, we will beat you if you don't go in, and we will break your bones. And this is what they told these young girls. And they went up into the building. At 8 o'clock, they start working, and at 8:45, 9 o'clock, the building imploded and pancaked on itself. And we just received a report now, this morning, from one of the young women. And just to, you know, go over it very quickly, she's confirming that she worked from 8 o'clock in the morning until 8, 9, or 10 p.m. Mm. So they were working 12, 13, 14 hours. They work 7 days a week. They have to work the entire April, and they were told they were going to have to work the entire May with no days off. She was in a factory called Ethertex on the fifth floor. And on Wednesday, when they were forced back in, because she says that they hired thugs to terrorize us, to get us to work. She had to go into work at 8 a.m. on Wednesday the 24th. The electricity went off almost immediately when they were in the factory, and then the mechanics started up the generators, and by 8:45, 9 o'clock, the entire building collapsed, and she said it fell from the back first. In a few seconds, the building collapsed, she said. I don't know what happened after that. I saw a concrete beam is on my legs, groaning in acute pain. I started weeping and calling for Allah to rescue me immediately. I switched on my cell phone. I gave a call to my elder brother to rescue me, you know, emergency right away. It's dark like a cave inside this building that's collapsed on us. The beams were so heavy, the concrete beams, I couldn't move my legs. She was eventually liberated and rescued a day and a half later. She said that on April 25th, they immediately took me to the hospital. After 1.5 days in hell, both her legs have been amputated.
Oh, my.
And so this is, and there are hundreds of these. These are not, these, we're not talking about a dozen. We're talking about hundreds of people. There are like pictures of women, one after another, you know, just all numbered, mm-hmm. 74, 75, 77, mm-hmm. all of them hospitalized, all of them with significant injuries. This was criminal. And right now, what we've just heard this morning from it was the nighttime in Bangladesh, that 435 people have been confirmed dead. The rescuers are saying 149 people are missing. That would bring the death toll, if that's accurate, it would bring the death toll to over 580.
Mm-hmm.
However, the police are saying that there could be as many as 1,000 people missing.
Oh, my.
So no one really knows. And the best figures we can get out of the hospitals right now is that about 650 workers are seriously injured, many amputees. It's completely frightening. You know, it's not... They've rescued 2,437 workers, but that means, along with the dead and the missing, that would say there would be 3,021 workers in the factory. Many of the workers told us there were 4,000 workers in the factory. So this is very chaotic, and the death toll could go way, way higher. This is the most devastating disaster in the history of the garment industry.
Mm.
So hopefully, the corporation's going to wake up a little bit, that they have to do better than this.
Well, who has to do better? Is it a combination of a corrupt government, a combination of factories, of U.S. companies trying to make clothing very, very inexpensively, and they're to blame? I mean, do we need to blame somebody at this point in order to move forward and make things better?
Absolutely. I mean, for one thing, the government of Bangladesh, unfortunately, it's somewhat dysfunctional, because the country is riddled with graft.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's just hollowed out with corruption.
Mm.
So that needs to be attended to for certain. The government cannot protect their own people, and on top of that, then you do have the corporations that move into these places. And this factory, Rana Plaza, that had 5 garment factories in it, it was built in a very shoddy way, illegal way. It was built on top of a swamp. They had a permit for 5 stories, but they continued, and they put up 3 more stories, which were not permitted and was illegal. They did shoddy work so that the place did, collapse. So it's, you know, it's the government. It's the people who own these factories, and of course the corporations do nothing. They just had 112 workers burnt to death in the Tazreen factory mm-hmm. fire, because they were locked in the factory. They were locked in. Mm. They weren't allowed to get out. So 112 workers died on November 24th, 2012, at the Tazreen factory, which was producing for Walmart and for other goods, and. You know, and that person, Delwar Hassan, is walking around scot-free. They didn't even arrest him. So at least they've arrested the people who own the Rana Plaza building, and they arrested the 5 garment workers, factories inside. At least they're trying to do something. But I, to answer the question as directly as possible, I think that the real point of action is our governments. It's the U.S. government. It's the European Union, it's Canada, it's Australia, it's people who are you know, these garments that are being made in Bangladesh, they're coming to the European Union, they're coming to the United States, they're going to Canada, they're going to Australia. We have to ask our governments to finally crack down on the deaths of these workers and institute some real policies that will protect the lives of these young women. So I think really our government needs to stand up and to really say to Bangladesh, for example, Bangladesh can export duty-free to the U.S. under the generalized system of preferences. It's not the garments. It's usually food and fish and things like that. But it would be very important to say to the Bangladeshi government, you will not bring these goods into the United States duty-free until you clean up your act and protect these young women. So in some ways, our government, if they were courageous enough, they would deny Bangladesh generalized system of preferences. And they would also press Bangladesh to clean up these factories. And it would be, you know, the corporations, we need to have the corporations talk about their audits. They say, like Walmart says, that they do 9,000 audits a year around the world, but, you know, a lot in Bangladesh. But all of those are secret. They're never publicly released. So this whole thing is broken. This system is broken from our governments to the factory owners to the labels. Mm-hmm. It's a mess.
Well, and it's been going on, Charlie. You've been doing this work for a long, long time. Preventable factory fires, unsafe workplace incidents have taken place in places all over the world that you have documented. 60% of the country's factories in Bangladesh, I've read, don't have adequate firefighting equipment. They don't have emergency exits. This has been going on for a long time. Now we're faced with the worst disaster in the garment industry in the history of the whole industry.
Yes.
But people have to have known these unsafe conditions have been going on for years and years. So why hasn't it changed? And what's now it's getting a lot of publicity because of this horrendous event, and maybe things will change a little bit. But you have to ask, why hasn't it changed before now?
Because all the labels care about are the 12-cent an hour wages.
Hmm.
So, for example, in Bangladesh, a helper gets 12 cents. That's no lie, 12 cents. And the junior sewers, who are not so junior, they could be working 4 or 5 years, the junior, senior, junior sewers, they get 22 cents an hour. And the senior sewers, the highest level in Bangladesh, get 26 cents an hour.
Goodness.
Nobody can live on wages like
no,
that.
No.
Those are starvation wages. And if you had the chance to go into the homes, we've visited, you know, hundreds, if not thousands, of workers in their homes over the years. And you would be horrified you wouldn't even put a lawn chair in one of their houses. They're so small. They're often, like, we were there just at the end of last year, and we went visited these workers at a factory very close to this Rana Plaza. And it was a room maybe like 6 foot by about 7.5 foot, if even that.
Hmm.
And you couldn't stand up because the ceiling was about 5'8" or 5.5 feet, and it was all corrugated metal with no windows. And it was, like I said, this little tiny thing, and you couldn't even stand up, and you really couldn't even stretch out to lay in bed because your feet would hit the corrugated wall. It was filthy. It was tiny. They have no possessions whatsoever. They hang their clothes up on hooks coming out of the corrugated metal. And then they have a toilet they have to share. Like, there's several outhouses they have to share with hundreds of other people. Then there's a water system, like one pump. They have to share that, all these people. Then they have outdoor burners. The people are living like it's worse than death. It's like torture. And the corporations are really just there sucking the blood out of these people. And, you know, they kill for pennies. That's really what this is about. They are willing to kill for pennies. And at some point, we need to get some control over our systems. I would put in right immediately is that the only thing that's going to really change Bangladesh is if the Bangladesh workers have the right to organize unions. And in the old days when, you know, we had the union efforts in the United States, which cleaned the whole entire country up after the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory back in 1911, It was only when the workers had their union rights and the government and New York State was really backing the workers and you know, demanding improvements and health and safety and the right to organize. That's when our middle class was really built and grew and became better and better every single year. The unions had maybe 38% of workers organized. Wages went up every single year. The workers in Bangladesh need to be able to have a union to protect themselves. Right now, they're just literally like animals being brought to a slaughter.
And Charlie, what about consumers in Europe, consumers in the United States who are people of goodwill, and there are many? What kinds of actions and what kinds of responsibility do they have to take for being able to buy things that are fairly cheap, that are made by people who are making 22 cents an hour?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's very tough, especially I'd say now where, you know, basically we're still in a recession in the United States and, you know, young people can't get jobs. They keep going to school. They keep getting larger and larger debts. So many people are forced to work part-time. I think this is a very difficult period for the American people in terms of wages and benefits. And we are still literally 2.85 million jobs short of what we had back in December of 2007 when the recession started. So we probably will not gain our full employment back again until 2017. So we're in a bit of a rough patch. I know back in when President Clinton was in office and he was creating 2.2 million jobs and the deficit was being wiped out, that's when people really stood up for these young workers because they felt empowered to do it. I think it's going to be a little harder now, but that doesn't mean we can't ask for change and demand change. And we have to do that with our corporations and with our governments. And, of course, there's good people, thousands and millions of good people all across the United States that really care for these women. And I think we need to write to our governments, you know, and we need to write to these labels and have our voice heard.
Charlie Kernaghan is our guest this hour. Charlie is the director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. And we are talking about the worst garment factory disaster in history. Word has come in now that 435 garment workers are confirmed dead, 149 are missing, and there may be many more than that. The mission of Charlie's Institute, which he founded some years ago, they believe that worker rights are human rights, and they undertake in-depth research, public education, and campaigns that empower the American people to provide support and solidarity to workers struggling to defend their most basic rights. There are a lot of levels to this story, and we welcome your phone calls. I'm sure we'll have many of them because we have an audience of people who are horrified by this story, and many of you are people of goodwill. Our number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Our email is talk@wpr.org, and our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. You can leave messages there. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Thursday, Jeremy Scahill will be joining us. Jeremy has a large book that is titled Dirty Wars, The World as is a Battlefield. He is author of Blackwater, and he takes us inside America's covert wars in many places in the world. All right, let's go to phone calls for Charlie Kernaghan, 800-486-8655, our number, and we start with John in Richland Center. Hi, John.
Good morning, Kathleen and Charlie.
Good morning.
I am the former chief inspector for the city of La Crosse. I've been state certified for commercial buildings for over 15 years. And I'd like to make a comment of the sad tragedy that just happened. Mm-hmm. Walmart is the largest retailer in the whole world, and I think they're taking advantage of the poor people on the consumer end and the manufacturing poor people in the manufacturing end. And I think this is no accident. They built a public hazard. I inspected the city of Rhinelander's Riverside Park levee where 8 young men had drowned. I told them that is a public hazard. They fired me 1 month later. My last statement is, I think Walmart has blood guilt on their hands.
Charlie.
I have to agree. It's the biggest corporation in the world, the biggest retailer. It has the power to keep people alive and to treat them like human beings, and that is not the case. They'll go out on the edge to just grab every single cent they can, and if 400, 500, 600 workers have to be killed, they'll do it.
Thank you, John, very much for your call. When you mentioned the workers need to be able to organize unions, what has to happen for that to become a reality, Charlie?
Right, in 2007, then-Senator Barack Obama, along with Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and Senator Byron Dorgan, 27 members of the Senate and about 170 members of the House introduced legislation, the Decent Working Conditions and Fair Competition Act. This was the first time ever that a bill was introduced, or it was in the process, and it was introduced to say that, look, you can bring your products into the United States from all over the world. We'll buy them. But you're not going to be able to bring products into the United States, you're not going to be able to sell them in the United States, and you're not going to be able to export them from the United States if these products were made by children, if they were made by workers who are under forced labor conditions, and you cannot sell these products if the workers do not have the right to organize a union, the right to collective bargaining, the right to have a real union, and decent working conditions. So the bill itself, the S.376 and in the House H.R. 1992, this legislation was really moving because it didn't say we're not setting wages around the world. If Bangladesh sends, they have wages that are 21 cents an hour, we want to help them raise those wages, but we're not going to set those wages. Wages are set by workers and by people in their individual countries. So we're not dictating wages, but what we are saying is the whole world says they acknowledge the ILO labor standards, the International Labor Organization, and those labor standards are just what the bill is all about. It's freedom of association, right to organize, the right to collective bargaining, no child labor, no forced labor, no decent working conditions. It's very simple. And this legislation started to go forward. 76% of the American people, in a Harris poll we did, 76% of the American people want this legislation. And what happened was the corporations found out what we were doing and they just shut it down. So we could have helped clean up the global economy by giving workers the right to be protected, and they can bring their garments or their products to the United States, they can make it in the United States, they can export it from the United States, but they're not going to do it if workers are slaves. So I don't think anything's going to change until there's legislation. It's the corporations are not really good at negotiations and talking to each other. They just do what they want. So we need legislation or we're all going to go down.
So these bills need to be reintroduced, Charlie? Refashioned? What?
Yes. We have to just start all over again with members of the House, members of the Senate, but much more importantly, with the American people. I mean, if the American people say again, if we do another poll, for example, and the American people say yes, 76% of us or more, we want laws to protect human beings. We want laws to protect the American people. We want laws to protect workers across the developing world. What we're saying and what we're asking for is almost nothing. We're not setting wages. What we're saying is you must adhere to the ILO labor standards, which the whole world says they agree on.
Mm-hmm.
So, the corporations, of course, are the ones who did everything possible to sink this stuff, but it will come back. And as a matter of fact, there was a dog and cat fraud. This is actually where we got our inspiration to protect human beings. We found that at the Burlington Coat Factory, this is back in 2000, we found very beautiful fur collars on these jackets, the Maiden of Burlington Coat Company, and this was in New York City. And the fur, they're beautiful fur collars. And when we looked at the label actually said fur, dog fur, and cat fur. So dogs and cats were being killed and skinned in China. Ooh. So that we could have these fur collars. When we put this out to the Congress, they immediately passed the Dog and Cat Protection Act of 2000.
Huh.
And so they do. Our legislation is their legislation. They say there's an import ban on the sale, manufacture, offer for sale, transportation, or distribution of dog and cat fur. So in other words, the Congress stood up for dogs and cats and unanimously had this bill that you will not kill dogs and cats. You cannot bring it into the United States. You cannot kill them in the United States. You cannot export the stuff. So the Congress stood up for dogs and cats. So if they did that, which is remarkably good, I think we should do the same thing for human beings.
Hmm. Let's go to Bob in Eau Claire. Hi, Bob. Bob, go ahead.
Good morning. A lot of these jobs, if not most of these jobs, were exported out of this country. We used to be the leading garment manufacturer in the world. And these jobs have been exported, quote, offshore, because corporations could no longer compete with the rest of the world. Because of the standard of living was so high in this country compared to the rest of the world. And so with the blessing of Congress and starting with really back in the Reagan administration, at first Bush, Clinton was a big proponent and supporter of the moving of these jobs offshore. And I'm a Democrat, but I'm calling a spade a spade. And so all of these jobs have now left this country. You have very, very little being done in this country in terms of the manufacture of textiles and apparel. The other thing that I just learned this week was they did find some of the clothing that was being manufactured in the building that collapsed. It wasn't Walmart, and I'm no fan of Walmart. The label on that clothing was actually Benetton. And so these people died while making Benetton clothing. So that's my contribution.
Thank you, Bob.
There was Bennington was one of the labels that initially denied having any, position on this. But as a matter of fact, it is Walmart is actually looking in right now to the Ethertex factory to find out if they produce there. But other U.S. companies were producing there: Charles Place, Cato, many from Canada, Joe Fresh, other labels from Spain. This was a big factory. There were a lot of different labels there, and yes, the garment work did go offshore, and this is happening in manufacturing. This is one of the reasons why we need this legislation to put a level playing field down. We don't have to have the race to the bottom. We don't have to have workers killed and burnt to death in the Tazreen factory or the collapse of the Rana building just crushing these young girls. We can say that we want to live like human beings. We want to stand up on our 2 feet. We want to have our back straight. We want to be able to help each other. And if we can help people in the United States, when we put out this legislation that says that you're just not going to have child labor, you're going to have, have the right to organize and to bargain collectively, that you'll have some rights. If we can help the United States and if we can help people across the world, that's what we want to do. We don't want to get caught up in this race to the bottom, because that's death for everyone.
Does the Pope carry any weight here? He yesterday condemned as slave labor the work conditions of victims of the factory collapse.
I jumped up and almost started yelling when I saw that.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, this is the first time we've had a Pope that came out and said that this sounds like slave labor to me. I think, you know, that very statement could be helpful.
More phone calls. Kernaghan is our guest this hour. Charlie is director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. Charlie has been doing work all over the world and has exposed horrendous working conditions in China and Bangladesh and Honduras and many other places in the world. We, of course, are talking about what continues to be a horrible story and gets worse every day. It's become the worst disaster for Bangladesh's $20 billion a year garment industry, the worst disaster in history. There are now 435 people who are confirmed dead. There are at least 149 missing, so the death toll could go much, much higher. Let's go back to phone calls. Tony in Tomahawk. Hi, Tony. Tony, are you there? Well, let's go to Peter in Baraboo. Hi, Peter.
Hi, thank you so much for taking the call. Just wanted to indicate this tragedy is going on around the world over and over again, and it will probably be coming back to the United States. In Wisconsin, our governor has been quoted as saying that his philosophy of divide and conquer is the first step. Act 10 has seriously impacted the ability of workers to organize. Public service employees are the first step in a long-term strategy to bring us back to the tragedies that are happening in Bangladesh in our own backyard. I'll take my comments off the air, other than I so much applaud both this show and the various shows that bring these ideas to our population.
Thank you, Peter. Charlie?
Well, it's clear that we're in a life and death struggle, and that struggle really is over our union rights and our rights to have decent wages and safe working conditions. Right now, what people like Governor Walker are doing is to just suck the blood out of the union movement, slashing wages, slashing benefits. Right now, we have the lowest union density since 1916. They are out to crush the unions, and the reason they're out to crush the unions is because the union workers earn 10,000 more on average, earn 10,000 more a year than workers that haven't had the privilege to be within a union, and they want to strip us of that because those wages are 27% higher than wages of workers who are not organized, and also the benefits and the health and safety and the political clout that the unions have. My opinion is point blank. If these attacks continue, we will go back to the Great Recession and Depression. We have to fight like mad to make sure our country keeps a strong labor movement. Once that goes under, God help us.
We go to Jerry in Milwaukee. Rather, hi, Jerry.
Good morning to you, Kathleen, and your guest. Another great program, by the way, Kathleen. My question is this. Though this happened in Bangladesh, would the guests have a list of other countries around the world that have similar conditions for workers? I mean, is a website that? And B, in terms of implementing change in Washington, D.C., is it divided among Democrats and Republicans in terms of actually getting something done? I mean, are the Republicans rejecting this? Are Democrats rejecting this whole idea of fairness?
Well, as far as the Congress goes, yes, it is. Right now, back in 2007, things were a lot more civil, believe it or not. I think the Congress now is dysfunctional and can barely do anything. So it's going to have to be a very popular movement. This exploitation is going on in every country across the world. And it's important to realize, you know, we were digging around a garbage dump in the Dominican Republic. This is a few years ago. And we found, we did it because there were garment factories all over the place. And so we went to a garbage dump that was right next to a processing zone. And we started digging around, and we found all of Nike's internal pricing documents. So we know how the system operates now. A Nike sweatshirt for a toddler cost $22.99. This was purchased in Macy's in New York City. $22.99 for a children's sweatshirt. Do you know the workers have to do 22 operations to sew the shirt? Every operation is broken down into 1/100th of a second. They're not playing games. When you get to the finish line of the 22 operations, they give the workers 6.6 minutes to sew the shirt. 6.6 minutes is 11% of an hour, and the wages at that time were 70 cents an hour in the Dominican Republic. That means that the workers' wages came to 8 cents for the entire garment. To sew the garment, the workers got 8 cents. The garment sells for $22.99, which means the wages come to 0.3% of the retail price. In other words, the wages don't even matter any longer. They're sucking. They're just pushing down. There's no reason for this. This is just pure greed, and we need fair wages. And you don't get fair wages without a union.
Charlie Kernaghan, our guest. More phone calls in a moment. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Charlie Kernaghan, our guest. Charlie, you've testified before Congress on many occasions. Is anybody calling for congressional hearings as to what role U.S. corporations and policy enabled this kind of thing to happen in Bangladesh? Will it be investigated in Washington, D.C.?
It may be. It's going to take some time because the tragedy is still unfolding. But the Congress has, more so years ago, we did a lot of testimonies in front of the Congress and the Senate. And recently, most recently, I testified about the VTEC factory in China, which now produces all the telephones. The U.S. doesn't produce phones any longer because in China the wages are $1 an hour. And in the United States, the wages were $7 or $18 an hour. So we don't make phones any longer because we have to compete against companies like VTech, where they hire children, interns, they hire young women. They force them to work 12, 13 hours a day, 6, 7 days a week. They're housed in miserable dormitories. They have no rights. They're not allowed to sit. They have to stand at work all day. They go back to dormitories where 12 women share each primitive dorm room, no mattresses. Often there's no showers. Workers just have a plastic bucket. They can fill some water and then go to the bathroom and splash themselves with it. They have no rights whatsoever, zero. And so we're being asked to compete against countries like China, which are completely corrupt and crooked, and literally there are no labor rights, there are no political rights, there are no women's rights. We really need to attend to.
Jerry, we thank you for your call. Therese from Viroqua writes, where can you go online to find out which companies use the company in Bangladesh that had the building collapse? Would it be helpful to boycott those companies?
Well, we have some up, and we'll be putting up more of those labels. If they want to come to the website, it's glhr.org.
glhr.org.
Yes.
Okay. Thanks, Therese, for your call. We have lines open. They've been crowded. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@WPR. We're talking this hour about what's become the worst disaster in Bangladesh's $20 billion a year garment industry. And our guest has worked on labor conditions and human rights all over the world for a number of years. Charlie Kernaghan is our guest, director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights. 800-486-8655. Tony in Tomahawk. Hi.
Hi, good morning. Charlie, what about the impact of prison labor in America and the effect of that on our own unemployment rate? And second, about 10 years ago, you were on and talked about a time when you went out to South America and our own State Department gave you all kinds of money to set up a corrupt business down there. And the more corrupt it was, the more money they would give you. If you could recall that story and share that. Thank you.
Well, prison labor is flourishing. It's, you know, pitiful, but the reality. And, yes, it was back in the Bush administration, George Bush Sr., they wanted to take U.S. tax dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars from American taxpayers, and they wanted to use that money to open up export processing zones across Central America, where we would pay for the building of these export processing zones. And not only that, we would, you know, give all sorts of incentives to people to go offshore. We actually were telling our own garment industry that we need to leave the United States and we need to go to El Salvador or Honduras or Nicaragua. So, literally, millions and millions of dollars were spent, hundreds of millions of dollars were spent to take jobs out of the United States, to bring them to places like El Salvador, where the wages would be 30 cents an hour or even less. The workers had no rights. They'd be blacklisted if they tried to even speak truthfully. And no, we did go down there with hidden cameras, and we actually interviewed a U.S. government official in San Salvador who was with the embassy. And this person came in, sat down. We set up a little camera inside our attaché case. We pointed it right at this man from the U.S. Embassy in San Salvador, and we said to him, we were, you know, thinking about sending some garments to Central America, and the guy just spilled the beans. He said to us, you can pay these people almost nothing. He said, you know, and you don't have to worry about unions or anything like that because we have a list, and we can check off every single worker. If any worker even has a brother or sister that's remotely related to a union, that person will never work in this factory. And we suggest that you start them out working, and then you move to a piece rate because you can speed them up and you'll make more money like that. And the person went on and on and on and guaranteed us there would always be low wages and there would be zero rights and zero unions. And this was our own embassy at the time, which was behind us.
Thanks, Tony, for the call. Karen, Richland Center, hi.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I'm curious. Well, I've got one comment. You know, earlier in the discussion, your guest mentioned the fact that, you know, legislation for protecting these humans. And the first thing that came to my mind was, my God, we can't even pass gun legislation, so how can we do this? But my question is, why don't these people rise up? Certainly they must see that these conditions that they're working in are bad. You know, they rise up against governments that are bad, that are evil. Look what's happening all over the world. Why aren't these people saying, enough, we're not going to work in this. You've got to give us better working conditions. Why?
All right. Why not? Why no rise up? Charlie?
Yeah, no, it's a very big rise up, actually. And what happened was, and if you're welcome to come to our website, you'll see it in full view. We filmed this. When the workers in the garment workers, and they're over, well over 3 million garment workers, maybe even 4 million garment
wow.
workers in 5,000 factories across Bangladesh. They, the women that sold these garments, 80% of them are young women, and they run this whole thing, and they have $20 billion of exports of garments. So that's currency that Bangladesh really needs, and it belongs to those young workers, but the young workers don't get anything out of it. In 2010, when the workers went out on strike, millions of people went out on strike. Hundreds of thousands of people blocked the streets. And what happened? When the young women went out there and they went to battle and they went to strike and they went to march, what happened is the government turned on them, young women, and shot them with rubber bullets and beat them with clubs. And then they had powerful water cannons that were coming down the street, so powerful that when they turned on the water, it just swept everybody away, and they put a dye in the water so that the workers could be arrested later on because you couldn't get the red out of your clothing or your skin. In other words, the workers fought back, and we did everything we possibly could. We hooked up with the people in the UK and England. The United Steelworkers was way out in front of this, and we were delivering the strongest messages we possibly could to the Bangladesh government, and they still went ahead and attacked these workers. So they did fight back. These people are not passive. They fight back. That's why they're being killed.
Thank you, Karen, for the call. What are people doing now as a result of this? What kind of action will take place on the streets outside the in Bangladesh, Charlie?
Well, I mean, they're horrified and sick to their stomach, and they've had enough. I mean, it was the Tazreen factory fire in November when 112 workers were killed. In January, another fire broke out, and they killed seven young workers. One of them was 15 years of age and 16 and 17 years of age. You know, now it's this factory. They've had enough. But, you know, they march, they chant, they try to do everything, but nobody listens to them. Not our U.S. government. You know, they killed an organizer in Bangladesh, Aminul Islam. And he was working with some workers that were producing in a factory that was producing for Nike in the same area, in Savar. And he always worked with them and helped the workers. And the workers told us when we needed help, we turned to Aminul Islam. Well, Aminul Islam was an activist, a union activist for the Bangladesh Center for Worker Solidarity. And what happened to him was he was killed. They killed him. They murdered him. They broke his ankles. They broke his toes, and they drove stakes into his right knee.
Oh, gee.
There's been no prosecution. This happened April 4th, when we were in Bangladesh last year. So, in other words, it would be wrong to get the impression that the Bangladeshis are patsies and they're just sitting there. They're getting killed, but they're trying to get their rights, but they are being beaten and killed. And we need to help. The U.S. government needs to crack down.
Kenneth in Janesville, hi.
Hello. If we can take...
I can't hear you very well, Kenneth. Kenneth, try again. I can't hear you very well.
Well, if we can take anything good about this, 400 million people outside of the United States have come out of poverty, and that's a very low estimate. And there are only 20-some million people in this country. So, but what I would like to know is what happened to the law that was supposed to be changed, the organizing law, when Obama was elected, is one of his primary planks of the Democratic Party, and there was a Democratic Congress and a Democratic Senate, but nothing happened.
All right. Are you familiar with that, Charlie?
Not in great detail, but I do know that I believe that the administration is not like 100% committed to labor rights. I think that they see they have tons of stuff on the plate, and, of course, there are crises all over the world. And I think that this issue of labor rights and international labor rights, I think it's getting shortchanged, for sure.
There's such a story that if you're a human being on this planet, how can you not respond to this kind of story? People who are getting up, going to work every day, making not enough money to live on in these kinds of horrendous working conditions. I mean, it just gets you at your very being, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But you know what? With these attacks against labor and attacks against, our wages are so low now. We're all in a battle right now, and we have the same, income inequality of the very wealthy people. We're at the same level as it was in 1928. We've gone backwards. We're at the same place now in terms of income distribution that we had in 1928. And the only hope you have, I heard Labor Secretary Rice say, when you look at the shared values as American people, shared values that we all hold, and then you look at the reality that we're living in, he thinks that we are ready for fundamental change. You know, I hope to God he's right, because we're going under. And the middle class is being destroyed. The labor movement is under attack. Our wages are falling. Our way of life is changing. And we're heading back into the 1920s when the robber barons controlled the country.
Charlie, give us the website again where people can get a lot more information.
Yes, perfect. It's glhr.org. And people can still call us at 412-562-2222. 2406.
What are you saying? 412-562-2406. 2406. Thank you, Charlie.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you for the opportunity.
Charlie Kernighan, he's director of the Institute for Global Labor and Human Rights, founded in 1981. He's been at this work with all of his being for a number of years now, responding to what has become the worst disaster for the $20 billion a year garment industry in Bangladesh, a story that is not to be ignored. All right. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing this hour, and thanks to Katie Mattson for on-air production in our studios in Milwaukee. Stay with us. We have another hour ahead.